if you're an executive producer, you should be able to be a showrunner and be involved in any aspect of production. But the most important thing is you're expected to be able to write a good script, a shootable script. That's the most important thing at every step. And if you're a great writer, you really don't need to worry about any of the other stuff.
You're listening to episode 55 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Gotham Writers for sponsoring today's episode. They teach creative writing classes in New York City and online and have built an incredible writing community. Be sure to hang around at the end of the show to find out why Gotham has earned an amazing reputation within the writers' community. Aloha from Hawaii. My girlfriend surprised me with a birthday trip to Hawaii, and I'm currently in the hotel recording this. I still can't believe 88 Cups of Tea reached its one-year milestone, and I'm so happy to celebrate with you all. Don't forget that our one-year anniversary giveaway contest ends on Monday, August 15th. 8 lucky winners will receive an amazing box of gifts. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on this. We have executive producer and TV writer David Gray on the show with us today. David started his television career as a staff writer on the Emmy-nominated Joan of Arcadia. He has also been a writer on Without a Trace, Gilmore Girls, and Castle. He is currently an executive producer on CBS's hit show, Madam Secretary. He's also the co-founder of Gotham Writers. I'm so excited to share this episode with you because we really get to pick his brain about the TV industry, how to break in as a TV writer, and what goes on in the writer's room at the studios. We also talk about the opportunities David created for himself and the importance of building relationships with people. We unpacked the business side of how David started and built up Gotham Writers, one of America's leading private creative writing schools whose interactive online classes was selected Best of the Web by Forbes. Now let's jump right in.
How you got started in the industry? Was it a love for storytelling? Was it writing or just making films when you were younger?
I really had an evolution. When I was in high school, I started to get into projects that would allow me to be on stage, whether it was doing plays with school or doing a local cable access television show when cable TV was first starting out in the early to mid 80s back in New York. They did a show called Dave Talks Turkey. It was modeled on David Letterman, where I was the host and my best friend Neil was my sidekick and musician and introduced me, and we did funny bits and I interviewed people. And then I was really interested in acting. And when I went to college, and I really thought I'd be an actor coming out of school. And then eventually I discovered that I liked putting words in other people's mouths than being the mouth that said other people's words on stage.
Do you remember that exact moment when you were like, okay, acting is not my thing?
Well, I definitely remember thinking how cool it is to write something and having actors up on stage saying it. But the real moment when I decided I was going to focus solely on writing and give up acting was when I'd written a play and I was auditioning actors for it. And an actor came in to play a part that would have been the part I typically would have played. And this actor, I just instantly saw in the audition, was so much better than I could have been. I realized, you know, I think I'll just stick with the writing.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That's pretty awesome. Well, you know what? It worked out well. So thanks to that actor, you're doing awesome things right now. So after that, did you just jump into writing screenplays? How did that work? How did you transition from college to real world?
Well, after college, I actually went to Woodstock, New York for the summer and with a friend. Yeah, we put on a couple plays that I directed and acted in. So at that point, I still thought I'd be an actor. And then I went to New York and did, it was sort of an untraditional route. I don't know exactly what was in my head, but I just started just producing with friends. But then I became more interested in writing. I went to graduate school for writing a couple years later, just a one-year program up at Boston University. And then when I came back from that, I was kind of doing everything. Acting, writing, directing, producing. I kind of needed to zero in on one thing. And I actually started writing screenplays with a friend of mine from graduate school. I was doing it from New York, which was tough at that time. I don't know if it's easier now because more of the business is there. But I'd sort of, you know, we'd write a screenplay, then go to LA, have a bunch of meetings, and then go back. And what I didn't really understand about the business is that you need to build up relationships in LA. Mm. The main advice I give most people interested in breaking into television or film is move to Los Angeles. But I didn't do that. So it was my failed attempt at being a screenwriter. Even though the stuff we wrote, you know, I had a terrific writing partner and we wrote some pretty good screenplays that came close to selling, but nothing did. And it wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles that I was able to start building relationships and, you know, having a clearer path to breaking into the business.
I understand that whole move is a huge deal and it's almost a culture shock in a way, super different from New York. But how did you even know to start these kind of relationships? Where did you even realize to go and who to talk to?
It was the failed screenwriting career that I think had taught me how the business worked. You know, I had decided I wanted to break into TV writing, and that means you have to write some spec scripts. And at that time, the industry was more interested in samples of shows that already existed. Mm. So I wrote a spec Sopranos and a spec West Wing. I knew I wanted to do hour drama because I was already in my 30s. And at that time, breaking into comedy felt like it was more the reserve of people in their 20s.
Interesting.
And I thought I could have a longer career in our drama writing. And plus, I'd written long form, whether it was plays or a movie. So it felt more appropriate for me. And so I wrote spec scripts and I got them to agents. I was able to get an agent who then introduced me to the executives in the business. You have to get on lists at every network and studio that you're acceptable. And then you get interviews with showrunners. They pull your stuff off the pile. You know, for me, interestingly, the script that got me my first job was actually a play I'd written because Barbara Hall, who created Joan of Arcadia, had a lot of success with a writer who was a playwright. She was interested in another playwright at that time and told the executive at CBS covering the show that she wanted someone like that. And fortunately, I was similar to that writer and had a play she could read. And so I got hired off my play.
That's really awesome. For the literary agents, is that when the connections came into play? Or was that a whole arena where you just kind of pitched or sent your stuff in to the literary agents via like a blind email submission or you mailed in your information to them? How did that work?
I realized the advantage I had over a lot of people who come out to LA and try to break into TV writing is what I had done in New York. I'd done theater. I had a play that I had put on in New York called Moose Mating, that was pretty solid. It had a nice little run. It actually got published by Dramatists Play Service.
Nice.
So it was my first little at some kind of positive thing happening in my writing career. When I came out here, I actually put on a production of that play that I produced with a couple friends, and I directed it. That was sort of like the equivalent of me throwing a cocktail party saying, hey, here I am in Los Angeles. And as it turned out, one of the actors in the play, purely randomly, his wife was a pretty powerful executive in the business. And she came to see the play, of course, because her husband was starring in it, and really liked my writing and was nice enough to introduce me to an agent. And that was my first agent. Off of that, I got a manager. I ended up getting other representation agency-wise. And then I went from there. And eventually I got my job on Joan of Arcadia.
That's freaking awesome. You're such a hustler. I have so much respect for you. I love those stories because you're one of those who really created that opportunity for yourself.
It took more than 3 years after I put that play on before I had my first job. So it's not like I did it and then boom, I got a job. And those were 3.5 long years.
Mm.
You know, so it wasn't like, oh, I'm so smart. I put on my play and look, they're throwing job offers at me. That's not how it happened.
Right.
I'm just saying you could connect the dots.
Exactly. I feel like if you didn't do that, it could have maybe taken 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's like incredible that you created that door for yourself, even though it did take a little bit of time. And I find that fascinating. If you don't mind me asking, David, did you move out here with savings, especially during such like a new chapter of your life, got married, you had your child, and that's tough. Did you have side jobs to kind of carry you through those 3.5-4 years? How were you guys able to manage and balance that?
I was pretty lucky. The financial part wasn't as challenging for me as it is for other people, probably, because I'd started a business in New York called Gotham Writers Workshop that was going really well. So I had that. And also my wife is a lawyer, and so she was working. So between the two of us, we were fine. But, you know, the way I look at it is anyone who wants to pursue their dream to be a writer or actor or dancer, again, anything where, you know, it's going to take time and you need to support yourself, you just need to figure out how you could be your own patron, you know, whether it's waiting tables or starting a little business or tutoring kids,
absolutely,
or whatever it is.
I am so happy that you did bring up Gotham, because obviously I am a huge fan of Gotham Writers. I've heard the most amazing things about you guys. I'm so proud to have you guys as one of our sponsors for the show. A lot of our listeners are storytellers. They're writers. A lot of them want to write their own books, but we have quite a few who are interested in the TV movie world. And the term, for example, executive producer. You are an executive producer for quite a few shows, but it's quite vague and quite confusing for some listeners. What does that mean for you? And I'm sure it probably changes with each show, right?
I've actually had the actual title executive producer on two shows.
One was Castle and
Castle.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And Castle, I started out as a producer, and you know, you get promotions or they're contractual after producers. I was a supervising producer. Then I was a co-executive producer for 2 or 3 years. And then my last year there, season 6 of Castle, I was an executive producer. My role as an executive producer on Castle wasn't much different than my role with any of the other producing titles. But that executive producer role was more contractual. Like, I'd earned it. I'd been a, you know, loyal writer on the show. I'd grown and gotten more experience. You know, really, executive producer is thought of as like a showrunner. But I was definitely never in any way, shape, or form the showrunner on Castle.
Gotcha.
On Madam Secretary, Barbara Hall is the showrunner, and I'm her number two. So she oversees everything. And I definitely have a lot more responsibility on Madam Secretary. I work with Barbara on making sure, on all the episodes, you know, working on the story for every episode. We just have one room. So when I'm in the room, I'm running the writer's room and running the story engine for the show. Of course, Barbara has the final say on everything. I also could jump in and, you know, deal with any aspect of the show, including, obviously, we have a lot of, you know, work with our studios, CBS Studios and CBS The Network, on whatever their concerns or needs are, and work with, you know, our production team, our physical production, you know, figuring out how we're going to produce episodes is a big part of the job, you know, on budget and casting and all aspects of production, which includes production design. But my primary focus and where I'm most valuable, I think, is just keeping the writer's room going and that story engine going. Every 8 business days during the course of the season, we have to turn out a script ready to produce. So to prep, we do 7 days of prep, and then we shoot for 8 business days, and then we do post-production. And every 8 business days, we need a script ready to go.
I notice like a lot of writers in the TV world end up being producers and executive producers and showrunners sometime. Is that a normal thing for TV writers to go into?
Yeah, it's a natural extension of being a writer.
Okay.
If you're going to be a writer, you have to be a producer. And it's really because television is a writer-driven medium. The reason directors are number one in the film world is that film came out of silent films. You know, the movies today, silent films were almost purely director-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly more than writers before there were words. And television came out of radio, where it was all the word. It was all writing.
Interesting.
It's just by necessity. I mean, if the writers are generating the stories and the scripts, ultimately the showrunner provides the vision for what you're doing, and everything comes from the script. So the producing part is a natural extension of the writing part.
Mm.
But that said, I think some people grow into more gifted producers.
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you have a favorite part in your day or part of your job as an executive producer for Madam Secretary that you love to do? Is there one thing that really stands out to you?
Probably where I could help the most,
which
is being in the writer's room.
Aww.
And breaking story. We call it breaking story, which is, I don't know why it's called breaking, but breaking story is just coming up with a story.
Gotcha.
And, you know, from the germ of the idea to, well, is it going to work over an hour? We do a teaser plus 4 acts. So it's 5 acts. Each act is just what happens in between the commercials. And then literally just getting into the details of every beat of the story, every scene, and sort of like outlining it together.
So how are you guys coming up with all these ideas?
When we started, Barbara had a list. I want to say it was like 6 or 7 or 8 great story ideas. Mm. And we did all of those. That was not exclusively, but pretty much in the first 7 to 10 episodes. We try to come up with stories that feel all of a piece. We find it works better, and we like to tell stories where they're somehow related to each other, sometimes just thematically, but also they bounce off each other. They dovetail in some way. One story provides the solution for the other story. Mm. So to answer your question, you know, it's part of the writer's job to come up with ideas for episodes.
Right.
It's very communal. Every episode is everyone's episode. All of our names are on every episode. Everyone's pitching in.
Yeah.
It would be really hard to just do it by yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Where do you find your writers?
Most of our writing staff consists of the people who Barbara hired, including me, right out of the gate when the show got picked up. CBS helped a lot. You know, they're very interested in staffing the show with the best writers. So sometimes it's people they have deals with. Sometimes it's just writers they have relationships with or they know who they think would be really appropriate. So most of our staff is still intact from that process. And then along the way, we've picked up one of the writers we hired is someone who Barbara and I worked with on Joan of Arcadia. It actually, to bring things full circle, it was that playwright who Barbara really liked.
Oh, really?
Joan of Arcadia, who is the reason that I ended up getting a job.
That's so funny.
Joy Gregory, yeah. And then Joy came on toward the end of, in the middle, I should say, of season one and is still on the staff to this day.
That's brilliant. Okay, so right now, David, I know there's a lot of press going on for Gilmore Girls for Netflix, and everyone's getting really pumped about it. I'm seeing it all over Facebook, everywhere on Twitter. And I saw that you co-produced the Gilmore Girls TV series. So what was that experience for you?
I was just on the last season of Gilmore Girls, and then it went off the air. So I have absolutely nothing to do with this new incarnation.
Yes.
But I'm sure it'll be great. It was a really great experience in a lot of ways because, and it was a pretty broad comedy. And I was actually the only writer on staff who had never written on a comedy, on a half hour.
Oh, wow.
In our drama room, people sit around and are thoughtful and thinking and often just staring at the board in silence. We write on a board, just jotting ideas and mapping out the episode. A comedy room is really loud, intense, people screaming out ideas. There was one time in particular where I thought, oh, I have the answer to the question that the showrunner put out there. And I literally couldn't get a word in for 20 minutes. And then finally, when I did get the word in, it actually was the answer. And it was the
thing. Oh, my God. Yay.
I mean, it was great. It was a workout for your brain.
Right. Coming in as a writer for the 7th season of Gilmore Girls, like, what did you have to do for the production aspect to then earn that co-producer credit?
Honestly, it was just contractual.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is there are rankings to, to like the military.
Okay.
So like,
okay.
You know,
I love that you're comparing it to the military.
In
love it.
TV, it's staff writer is the most junior level. That's when a baby writer, your first job is staff writer. Then you get promoted to story editor. It doesn't mean you're editing all the stories. It's just a promotion. It just means you're called story editor. No idea why it's called that. Then executive story editor. It doesn't mean that you're the executive in charge of editing the stories. It's just called executive story editor. You're still a relatively junior writer. Then co-producer, then producer, supervising producer, co-executive producer, executive producer. Those are the rankings. And you could be an executive producer on a show who only sits around and writes. It's just because you're on the show for a long time. A lot of people have gone contractually just up to that level. And you could, or you could be an executive producer and you're the showrunner. So the titles are confusing. But really, if you're an executive producer, you should be able to be a showrunner and be involved in any aspect of production. But the most important thing is you're expected to be able to write a good script, a shootable script. That's the most important thing at every step. And if you're a great writer, you really don't need to worry about any of the other stuff. So really, they're all just titles for writers, you know. And now some of the titles are for people who aren't writers. Like I said, you could be a non-writing executive producer. You could be a non-writing producer, you know. And the real incredibly important jobs, like, you know, often someone's producer level who runs post-production or higher than that. So there are very important producers who aren't writers. And I understand how people outside the business would be confused by it because it's confusing.
Yeah, no, but thank you for demystifying everything. So you knowing all these writers, are most of these writers trained or a lot of them are self-taught? Do you know anything about that?
Most of the really good writers I've worked with have at least some training. A lot of them went to film school, studied screenwriting.
Right.
A lot of them took writing classes undergrad. Theater is a really good place to start because, you know, you could write something and see actors on stage performing it, and you get that sense of what works and what doesn't work. But then there are people who just say, oh, I want to be a TV writer, and they come out here and they get various jobs in production and they're writing their specs, and eventually, you know, if they're good, they get an agent and break through and, you know, get a job. Everyone has their strengths as a writer. It's really important to have an ear for dialogue, but you need to work on that. You have to do it. I find that people who go to school for it have just taken the time to really work at it and explore their talents and understand their weaknesses and try to get better at those. If you want to do it, certainly you should take a writing workshop. I mean, if for nothing else, to find out if you've got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then take your shot. But it takes work. I mean, it's like anything. I don't think anyone would expect to, like, oh, I'm going to go to New York and I'll be a ballerina. And I'll star in the next big production of the Nutcracker.
Yeah, you need some practice and training for sure.
It's a real craft. The people that don't have it, you see how much they struggle. You know, there are some people with natural ability, but it's really tough to get it all into, you know, 54 pages if you don't have a lot of training behind you, or at least a lot of practice, or you have to learn somehow.
Talking about craft, I know that Gotham Writers really focuses on craft. I know that's a big part of your program. I am fascinated by your business. I think you did a phenomenal job. Could you dive into why you and your partner ended up creating Gotham Writers?
We started the business. I was 25 years old. I don't think I was sitting around thinking, oh, what business can I start? But I certainly was open to the idea, because when I met Jeff Fliegelman, my business partner, at the time, he was the educational director for something called the Foundation for the Dramatists Guild. And Jeff mentioned to me that he taught playwriting and screenwriting classes out of his apartment. And he called it the Gotham Writers Workshop. When Jeff mentioned that, I said, why don't we make it into a business? And I was thinking, I'm a good teacher. Obviously, I knew Jeff was a great teacher and he was running this program. We both felt that the creative writing classes we'd taken as undergrads had shortcomings, that often creative writing classes devolved into people just criticizing each other's work, like when you're workshopping material. And we thought that they didn't focus enough on teaching craft. Mm. If you break it down, there's craft of writing, and then there's your talent. But if you don't know the craft, your talent can't be unleashed. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really fulfill your talent if you don't put it into the vessel of craft. And every aspect of craft, you could be informed as to how it works.
Yeah.
So we sought to build a better mousetrap. And all we cared about was making the best quality classes. And eventually we started to grow and were able to hire our first employee and then another one and a staff. And eventually we were able to hire a dean of faculty and someone to run the company, a president, and step back. Yeah, we're still involved, but more with just helping to provide the vision for moving forward. Or, you know, we have today, as you know, Alex Steele runs the company, and he's incredible and taken it places we couldn't have dreamed of. We also have a way of critiquing stories called The Booth. I'm not sure if you know about that, but it's where everyone, you go around the room, and rather than it being a free-for-all that could devolve into negativity, which really doesn't help a writer, everyone goes around the room and has to say one positive thing and one negative thing, basically. So what did you like about the story and why? Mm. And ideally link it to an aspect of craft. You know, I really liked how the character developed in this way. And that's an example of great character development, or this dialogue was great. But here's an area where I think you could improve. It wasn't good, and here's why. You know, I really didn't understand how the setting helped support the story or act ironically or not. Then no one's allowed to repeat the same positive or negative. So there could be no piling on. And you get to hear all this criticism about things that worked in the story and didn't work in the story. And so that works on a lot of levels.
Absolutely. And you know what I love is that you guys are online.
Yes. I feel like we were one of the first companies who actually was, you know, running a business successfully online, actually making money. Certainly more than 50% of our business is online. It's not closer to 70%.
Nailed it.
Yeah. And Jeff developed them. I got it so long ago. I feel like I worked with him on them. But basically, like, to replicate our live classes in an online format. So there's a lecture every week in the Blackboard area. There are writing exercises. Maybe I mentioned that before. There's a writing exercise that you do in class every week that helps support and develop what you learn about in the lecture, that aspect of craft. So if you're learning about dialogue in the lecture, one week you'll be writing, doing an exercise in dialogue writing. Mm-hmm. You know, every week there's a new lecture and exercise, and people have to hand in stories, and they get critiqued in the booth section, and everyone gives a positive and a negative. And you could ask questions of the teacher, you know, in the Blackboard area, and they mimic our live classes, except it's an online setting. So Jeff had that great idea that we should do online classes, and it really was the future of the company. And my idea at that time was to do classes for teenagers, which we still do.
Oh, there we go.
Fantastic. It just wasn't as big an idea. You know, there just isn't as much interest as there was for people to take online classes. I'm pretty sure we've had people from more than 100 different countries take classes at Gotham Writers Workshop. And in any given online class, you'll have people from several countries all over the world. So it's pretty cool.
I love your idea about the teenagers. So I know you're super busy right now on Madame Secretary. Sounds so classy. But what are your future goals? Do you have a longer term, like in 5 or 8 years, or just overall where you hope to direct something or be the number one showrunner of something, or kind of see where it goes with Madam Secretary?
That's an easy question. I hope to create my own show one of these days. Right now, I'm very happy working for Madam Secretary and working with Barbara. I could end up being asked to run a show that was created by someone who's from the movies or isn't interested in running the show, or just a more junior writer had a good idea but can't be a showrunner. So, you know, they'll want to bring in a showrunner, and that's another way I could go, where I'd run a show that I didn't create. Or I could continue being Barbara's number two for another 3 or 4 years, which would be fantastic. As far as directing goes, that's not really something I'm focused on. I have a lot of respect for directors. I used to love to direct theater. Directing TV and film is a lot different. I get all the fulfillment I need out of being a TV writer.
That's awesome.
One day I'll probably end up writing another play if I have an idea, and, you know, wherever I am in my career. Maybe I'd like to write a novel one day. I probably don't have the patience.
So let's say if you were to write a novel anytime soon right now, theoretically, what kind of style would you write? Fiction, sci-fi, or what do you think?
I really shouldn't have said that, because I'm not good. It would be the next Catcher in the Rye, I think.
Nice.
It would be more naturalistic. It would definitely be more of an exercise in voice, probably written in the first person. I'm really not going to do that anytime soon.
Okay, fine. Okay, so let's take a stab in the dark. Let's say if you did have an opportunity to be your own showrunner, the number one, what kind of style do you think it would be?
Yeah, I like writing realistic characters, you know, dramatic situations, but with a lot of heart and a lot of humor. You know, and Barbara and I share that in a lot of ways. I consider her my mentor. You know, Madam Secretary checks all the boxes of the type of writing I want to be doing. So I'm very fulfilled what I'm doing right now. And if I'm lucky enough to create a show that gets in the air and I get to run it, in tone would probably be pretty similar.
Now, for any writers out there listening in that are really fascinated with the world of TV writing, is there a class that you really believe in and you feel like, oh, this is the one that I would totally recommend to people wanting to get in the business and wanting to be a TV writer?
Definitely. If you want to be a TV writer, take a TV writing class. We have TV writing classes at Gotham Writers Workshop. So If you want to be a TV writer, you should take a TV writing class.
Awesome. And what about like character development ones or dialogue writing?
We do that. Those are shorter, you know, that just focus on, you know, one aspect of craft.
Yeah.
Our most popular class is Fiction 1, because I think, but a lot of people, you know, just want to tell stories, and that's the most basic and easiest way to just tell a story. You know, you don't need a film crew to write a short story. You can write a short story and that's it. It's done. There's nothing else to do with it except try to publish it or get it out there for people to read. So I understand why they're, you know, Fiction Writing 1 has always been our most popular class, beginning fiction writing. You know, that is a class close to my heart. That's what I started teaching at Gotham. You know, when you write a screenplay, you could be done with the screenplay, but it's not finished until it's shot. It's produced. It's shot, the actors, a director, a crew, and then post-production, and then there it is. There's your movie. It's only the beginning of something.
What do you advise listeners who are just so fascinated by your world and what we talked about today and want to get their foot wet and have writing experience, what do you advise them?
Well,
it's a fully loaded question.
No, I think if you're really serious about it, you should move to Los Angeles. Maybe there's enough of the business in New York there that New York is a good place to start out. I can't completely speak to that, but I know that the biggest chunk of the business, the biggest piece of the business is out here in LA. And try your hand at writing a television spec. And the easiest way to do that is to take a class. Getting into a class is the best thing because then you could have someone you actually could talk to, a teacher who you could also try to pick their brain on what the next steps would be. But you've got to write a great sample script, probably a pilot, you know, come up with an idea for a show and write a pilot. But hard to do it in a vacuum, easier to do it if you get a book and you take a class. And then you got to be honest with yourself if you feel like you're good at it and have other people, if other people try to listen to what they're saying, but if people who know what they're talking about tell you, no, you're really good, then what I mean is like someone who maybe a class you took, a teacher who's an expert in it or who's done it. And maybe then you decide to move to LA, but you don't just write one thing, you have to write and write and write and write. I remember seeing John Wells speak years ago. He's one of the most successful TV writers and producers really ever. And he said he had a stack like 2 or 3 feet high of work that he'd written, just spec material he'd written before he got his first job. So writers write because you'll keep getting better the more you write. So write a pilot, then write another pilot, then write another and another. Write a sample for a show you love. If you have a couple of great samples, try to get it to an agent or an assistant to an agent or a producer or an assistant to a producer who knows people. Try to network. If you're really good, you've got that talent, you've learned the craft, you're someone who could advocate for yourself and be presentable in a room like, you know, where people would want to be around you and work with you because TV writing is very collaborative. Take the shot. Come to LA. But I know there's a lot of risk involved. I remember when I moved to LA thinking to myself, if this doesn't work out, I'll eventually move back to New York, a failure, and everyone will know it. But you've got to be willing to take that risk, and better to try and know you failed than to never do it and always have the regret thinking, what if? So you're taking a risk no matter what. It's an enormous amount of work. I mean, I remember crying over my computer at night working, you know, feeling sorry for myself. I wish I was just out with friends having a beer, you know, or just enjoying my life and just, you know, slaving over spec scripts. It's an enormous investment. It's a commitment. What I mean is an investment of time, and it's a commitment. And it's extra hard because you're probably working a full-time job to make a living. You know, the people who I think have it dialed in or doing it just right are young people in their 20s or early 30s, you know, are tutoring. Like they're working for Princeton Review or on their own, and they're getting paid 50 or 100 bucks an hour to tutor, you know, high school kids on the SAT or something. And they only have to do that like 15 hours a week or 17 hours a week, you know, to get by. And then they can put all their time into their writing. And then maybe you're also in a theater group and you're writing plays and putting those on or doing improv and learning about structure and dialogue through doing it. I know a guy who does all that, and I think he's doing it just right. Because then you're giving yourself time to also, you know, maximize and your good hours during the day to be working on your scripts. But you have to sacrifice. You know, someone once said to me, you got to chain yourself to your computer. And it's true. You know, you can't just dash off one script and expect to have the business open the gates for you and say, come on in, we'll hire you. There's an enormous amount of competition. And your script is your calling card. You have to have a great script. And you've got to be willing to network. And it's not for the faint of heart. It's also, you really have to be passionate about it and love it. I mean, I think some people get into it for the wrong reasons. I could tell you there's not a lot of glamour. And certainly when you're doing it for a living, you don't feel the glamour. It's a job. It's a great job. I'm incredibly lucky to be able to make a living doing something I really enjoy. But it's also a lot of hard work and stress, like a lot of jobs. You know, if you really want to do it, it starts with writing a great script. When I was writing my first spec script, I remember my manager, who I've mentioned a few times, said to me, and I was going to write a Sopranos, and he said to me, you've got to write a spec script that's better than what's on the air for the show. Because they don't get, like, you get 6 months or a year, you get as long as you want to write your spec script. You know, they have to turn it around, you know, on a deadline. You have to be able to write a script in 5 or 6 days, you know, yeah, or 4 days or 3 days if you have to, or in a weekend if you have to, as a professional writer and with the tight deadlines of television. But when you write your spec, you could take months or more. So there's no excuse for it not to be, you know, all working. There can't be any clunker lines in there. The story has to work. But you also don't have to write the great American novel. You don't have to feel, put the pressure on yourself that it's got to be the most original thing ever. I read a Sopranos spec script of a very successful writer. This was from before he became successful. That was given to me by my manager. And it was just a simple episode of The Sopranos, nothing flashy about it, but all the characters' voices were right, and the story worked. It was a simple story told well, and that guy has a stellar career, because that's hard to do. Just writing a story that works with dialogue that works in the voice of the characters of the show, that's really hard. Most people can't do it. And everyone struggles with it. I struggle with it, you know, every time I sit down to write a script. But if you've got natural ability and you're willing to work hard at learning the craft and work hard at writing a script, you know, then it's a matter of then being a good salesman for yourself and networking and breaking in. It's not rocket science. It's not that hard to figure out how to get there. But it takes a lot of persistence, and it could take years. It takes a lot of patience and persistence and willing for people to say no. You know, I know great writers. I think of one in particular, a very successful writer. I mean, he was told, "You stink, and what are you doing? Why are you even trying to be in this business?" Many, 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 many times before he broke in. And you know, I was rejected like everyone. Any successful writer gets rejected dozens, if not hundreds of times before they have any success.
Yeah.
So it takes a certain kind of person. But then it's a hard job. And so you should make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, that you're really good at it and you're passionate about it. There isn't anything else you really want to do, because there are a lot of other good ways to make a living. And, you know, and if you're doing it for the right reasons and you feel like you have natural ability and you're willing to work hard at it, there's no glamour, though. You shouldn't do it to hang out with cool people or famous people.
Yeah, no,
or,
of course.
There's no party. You know, everyone goes to sleep at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, you know.
That's everyone's like, way too tired. Oh my gosh.
You know, you're not going to be hanging out with Leo DiCaprio.
Thank you, David. You've been amazing. And I'd love to wrap it up with one final question. I love asking my guests, do you have any books that you can recommend for us to check out that have made a huge impact in your life?
Yeah, books on writing. Adventures in the Screen Trade is great by William Goldman, because it's about the business. And I think it's just as timely today as it was when he wrote it decades ago. And also about writing, about screenwriting. And he's just such a great writer. And, you know, he wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, one of the great character banter dialogue movies ever written. I think just read books that inspire you. You know, often it's helpful to read something to get a voice in your head that you want to like imitate. Because ultimately, you know, especially if you want to be a TV writer, a lot of it's about imitating the voices of characters. I like reading Philip Roth because he just writes with such a great voice. I could tell you shamelessly that Gotham Writers Workshop has terrific books on writing, all edited by Alex Steele. We have a book on screenwriting and a book on reading fiction. And they are fantastic and written with chapters. Each chapter on craft written by different Gotham teachers. I personally took the route of taking writing classes. I took a lot of classes, undergrad and majoring in English creative writing and going to graduate school and also taking classes outside of school. I like the interaction. Books on writing outside of the Gotham books, it really wasn't my thing. And God, it's been a while, so I can't remember.
But these are awesome ones that you've suggested already. Yeah. So thank you.
Or you know, read plays that like read Edward Hall.
Oh yes, plays are awesome.
Anything that inspires you. It's ultimately about writing great dialogue and characters. So even reading Shakespeare, but reading, you know, great plays, writers that you wish to emulate. Or even reading screenplays or teleplays of the types of writing that you want to do. So that's that.
Perfect. Oh, David, you've been lovely. You've been so wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, no, it's my pleasure. And I hope I came off positively because, you know, look, I have a terrific career and I'm very happy. And what I find is that people who are serious about it, who've got ability, you actually have a really good shot at getting into it. You just have to be honest with yourself about, you know, what you've got. But unfortunately, it just is very competitive.
Yeah.
But anyway, my pleasure. Thanks, Ian.
That wraps up our interview with David Gray. David, thank you so much again for your time and your generosity. I had the best time picking your brain about the TV writing business, and I loved hearing how you grew Gotham Writers from ground up. Listeners, thank you for joining us today. I hope you had an awesome time learning about the business. For all of the awesome resources and books mentioned in David's episode, be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/David Gray. I know there's quite a few of you listeners who are actors interested in writing your own films or even web series. There's a lot of you who are working on your own novels and short stories right now, and if David's episode piqued your curiosity about writing for TV or films, I am so excited to tell you more about Gotham Writers and why they're an incredible asset to writers. As you heard in David's episode, Gotham Writers offers classes in screenwriting, TV writing, and a course that introduces all types of script writing called Writing Scripts 101. They also offer courses that focus specifically on character and dialogue. All of these courses are offered online and live in New York City. Gotham believes that everyone has a story to tell, and they exist just so they can help writers like you tell your story better. You learn from expert teachers like David Gray, who are accomplished writers and are amazing at teaching. Through lectures, writing exercises, and workshopping, you learn the craft of writing movies and TV shows. Gotham teachers also offer advice on the tricky task of breaking into the business. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/Gotham Writers to check out their classes. They have a super supportive staff that will help you find the perfect course for you.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!